Welcome to Sip the Tea, the podcast where we dive into the digital lives of our tweens and teens. I'm Rochelle Best, a mom, a tech enthusiast, and your guide through this uncharted territory of our kids' online experiences. You may be wondering what's up with the name. Sip the Tea is teenage slang for sharing the latest scoops, spilling the beans, and opening up about what's really going on. So grab your headphones and join me on this eye-opening journey about what's really going on behind those screens.
So this week's episode is about gaming, and I think this is a real struggle for a lot of parents. I've been through it myself with my kids, just wanting to spend far too much time on their devices gaming. But then at the same time, as you were saying, Rochelle, they do learn a lot. I'm astounded at the things my daughter's been able to learn just from Minecraft, which is, you know, quite, I think probably one of the more innocent games.
Definitely one of the more innocent games. And I completely agree with you. I think if we look at gaming in itself, we have to realize that our children are gaining skills from gaming. Gaming is not all bad. I did a whole article about the benefits of online gaming. You know, so it's about cognitive development. There's so much research that says gaming teach our children how to critically reason, how to be quick on the trigger. If you look at some of these games, they have to move quite quickly, hand-eye coordination. All of those skills they learn through gaming. They learn not only critical reason about situations, but also how to do that quickly. Now, if you think about how they can apply that eventually when they start their own business or when they start pursuing their careers, these skills are really important. If I also look at gaming in terms of using computers, our children learn to type quite quickly. So there's a lot of these skills that sounds trivial when we say it like this, but there are a lot of these skills that our children are just picking up because they game and because they're in those environments.
It comes so naturally to them. You know, we laugh about the typing. I had to learn to type when I was at university studying journalism, and I learned to type on a typewriter. Our kids are almost, as you said, being born into this. They can type by a very young age.
You're talking about Minecraft. My daughter started playing Minecraft when I think she was about 8 years old, 9 years old. I didn't show her how to play Minecraft. She started on her own. She built the most amazing structures in Minecraft. And you know what? I picked up my phone the other day and I downloaded Minecraft. My brain doesn't work that way.
I can't understand either.
So it's just the way that they reason, the way that they've taught themselves how to do these things.
I play the very basics since I was about six. When I was six, I started playing Minecraft in my Xbox 3, which we had, which was the first time I'd ever been able to. And it's now 10 years later, and I have upgraded to playing on my laptop. When I played for about 6 years, just the trial edition, I wasn't able to get the whole version. So I'm a long time Minecraft player. I've been playing Sims now, as well as this other game called Stardew Valley, which is quite fun to play, which I enjoy a lot. I used to use it to connect with the people that I played Minecraft with when I was younger, like when I was about 12, I would. But now it's become more of I've connected with the people I play Minecraft with now, but it's also my friends because I'm not a very social person because of some mental problems. And so I prefer to be online with people that I can trust and that I know. And I have a very specific agenda to knowing and finding out if they're who they really are or not.
So we're talking about the positives here, but what are some of the less safe or beneficial games that kids are playing?
There are a lot of games that promote violence. I had a mum coming up to me the other day who said to me her son at the age of 9 started playing one of these games with his father. So he started playing Fortnite with his father at a very young age. And part of that is there's a big component of violence in that game. I think about all the first-person shooters, and there are just too many to actually name. But some of the first-person shooters are ridiculously violent. And again, In the first episode, we talked a bit about becoming desensitized. This is one thing that we need to look out for. That level of violence that we make our children believe is actually okay.
Well, I have this one game that's pretty violent. It's a game called People Playground. Now, it's not necessarily violent if you don't do the violent stuff. So it's basically this 2D game where you can spawn. So it's not realistic at all, but there's lots of... So you can turn goo and stuff off. But if you leave it on, you can like explode the little people or stuff like that. I think I have showed them it before, but I'm not sure. I don't think I showed them like all the gore that's in it.
Now, is a game going to turn your child into a murderer? Probably not.
Yeah.
It's just the way that they interact and starting to think about violence that we may want to control a little bit. Then there are other games that allows an online gaming chat function. So it's not the content of the game necessarily that's a problem, but because there's an online game chat, it starts to become a breeding ground for predators. Mm. Online predators are lurking everywhere in those chat rooms, and they're hiding behind pictures that we spoke about in Stranger Danger.
I've been approached before by, I'm going to say, 3 people asking online for nudes, and I've each time blocked and reported them because that's not okay. And all 3 times was when I was 12. So I have been quite upset about that, but I did reach out to my friends and they helped me report him or report them. There were multiple people. It was on Discord, yes, but it was from servers that I joined. Like, I had joined this one server which was for hanging out for people under 16. So I felt like it was a good place for me to be because I was just looking for friends. And for me, I had found a couple people that I liked, and we chatted, but never really, we didn't reveal any, like, where we lived or our actual ages or what our names were. We just had our Discord name. And we just chatted like that. But when these people would enter my messages, then I would immediately go and report them and tell the servers about it so they can also report it so that they wouldn't go to anyone else.
Something that all parents are probably asking about is Roblox. Is Roblox safe for my child? It's one of the first games that we introduce to our children because it's so innocent. Now, one thing that we have to realize is Roblox is not a game in itself. Roblox is a platform where other games are hosted. If you go into Roblox, there are a number of games that's on that platform. And I must say, Roblox has done some good work trying to filter out some of the comments. So yes, there's also an online chat, but if you, for example, using swear words, it would warn you and say, this is not allowed on our platform. So they've actually done a brilliant job at helping parents. But then every now and then there is a game that slips in to the Roblox platform, and that's perhaps not appropriate for our children.
And without being in touch with these games yourself, how do you as a parent kind of keep tabs on what they're doing?
I believe that a lot of gaming should happen with adult supervision. Okay. A child shouldn't just game in a shut door type environment where you can't easily walk in. I also advise parents to ask their children about the game. So what is the game about? What do you do on the game? You know, what is the objective? When will you know when you've won the game?
Mm.
And that to some extent will also tell you what the game's about. Are you killing people or are you building structures?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Is it a combination of these things? Because when we, for example, building villages, it also teaches that reasoning and being able to do multiple things at the same time. You have to create a village with people living there and you have to look after them. So it's being able to juggle a lot of these things at the same time. Now, when we talk about safer games for children, I always advise parents to go to commonsensemedia.org. It is the best website I've discovered on my journey so far. It literally has reviews of every single game I've tried to find information on. So it will have a Common Sense Media review. But then what's powerful about it is they will say that the age restriction in the App Store or the Play Store is X, but our common sense media age restriction would have been completely different.
Yeah.
What I also like about it is they have parents writing reviews about specific games. So you start going through a process of when features in the game change, the parental reviews could change, right? Because they keep updating it. And then they have a section where children write reviews for the games themselves. So sometimes you can see a contrast between the parent review and the child review.
That's
and sometimes it's actually quite in sync. The children and the parents are reviewing it the same way.
What are the kids that you interviewed telling you about the games that they're playing? Do they feel that they are at all at risk or vulnerable when they're gaming?
Not at all. So I must say, except for the one guy that told us about Evelyn and Evelyn being in the same Discord server as he was.
I met this guy named Evelyn. And so this guy, he was really, really into like D&D, Dungeons, Dragons, all types of role-playing games. And so he would play that very often, invite other people to go and play. And so then I checked on Discord one day, looked at notifications, and it told me that if you've got contact with this person, Evelyn, you must remove yourself or remove him from your friends list and just cut contact with him entirely because he's suspected to be a pedophile, apparently, which was a bit upsetting. Owner of the server had found some evidence about it, and they didn't post any pictures or anything like that, but they just said, okay, if you've got contact with this person, we have evidence that he is, yeah. And so just stopped talking to him entirely.
In fact, the one boy kept telling me about how he feels the people they're playing with are so friendly. But the children definitely don't think they're at risk.
I am, mostly PC games. Like, I have a few games on my phone just to play, like, while the power's out. But right now, I'm really into Overwatch, which is an online game. And it's so much fun. So much fun, honestly. It is, it's an FPS, a first-person shooter. But you're on teams of five. And you just, like, get thrown into an arena and you have to fight depending on which game mode you picked.
In terms of what games I play, honestly, I think I've spent tens of thousands of hours playing different games. So if I were to get into all the games that I play or have played, it would take a while. I think currently, games that I play the most are Elden Ring, Osu, which is a rhythm game. It's an awesome game. I really enjoy it. Overwatch, that's about it because I've been kind of slowing down recently. I have been using Discord almost religiously since 2018.
So for me, there's definitely a component that says children are vulnerable. They enter into this entertainment world that they don't necessarily understand. That's providing them entertainment and in a good way. But they need to be educated on the risks that also sits within those games.
The only game that I have played is Candy Crush, and I can see how easy it is to get sucked in and waste hours upon hours gaming. And in the last episode, we discussed pornography and addiction to pornography. I imagine that it is quite easy for teenagers to become addicted to gaming as well. What is the sort of limit that one should place in terms of how many hours they spend?
I'll answer that question now, but just leading into my answer, you've played Candy Crush. Have you ever played Township?
No.
So the difference is that Candy Crush, you go through the different levels and obviously your lives end at some point and you're almost forced to stop.
Yes. Which is a good thing, I think.
Which is a good thing. You keep your timer on and then you have another three lives and then you're into Candy Crush again. But there's that kind of logical limit for Candy Crush unless you buy more lives and you spend money. But let's not go into that. But something like a very innocent game, like Heyday, is something that my daughter used to play. We used to play it as a family. So it's building your own farm and it's farming specific things. But then your crops get ripe at a certain time of the day and you have to harvest those crops and then you have to send deliveries to other places. And it starts to become quite evolved. So now you're building this little town. You're producing various products. You have airplanes coming in and they have notifications built in. So you would throughout the day, throughout the night, you would get notifications to say, this is now ready, that's now ready, your plane's going to depart, you haven't loaded it yet. So even something that is, from a content perspective, quite innocent, addiction is very real because it keeps pulling you back. I mean, how do these apps make money? They make money by pulling you back into the apps and keeping your attention there for as long as they can, because there's advertising that happens in there. There's all sorts of other things. That's why in game development, you'll see a lot of the games, even the most innocent games, now have games within game.
Yeah.
Just to keep your attention there so that you don't exit and go to another app. A lot of it is based on how they feed you information, and they feed you information through notifications. So this is where screen time comes in. And for introducing screen time, saying you have a total screen time limit of 2 hours every day, your child is going to be defensive because he's going to go, well, why is that appropriate?
Mm.
Sitting down with your child, talking through his apps and saying, so Lisa, what do you think is a reasonable amount of time for you to sit in front of your screen? Let's debate that. What is a reasonable amount of time that you think is okay to play games? What is a reasonable amount of time for you to be on WhatsApp or Instagram or Pinterest or whatever she's using at the time? And having that conversation, coming up with a limit that makes sense for both of you and having the conversation, the connection,
yeah,
that's the way to do it. And it doesn't matter what the end result is. Parents should always be winning that conversation because we give and take, give and take, give and take. As long as we reach something that's reasonable. For me, it's more around what does the schedule of the child look like and how do we allow for enough sleep?
Mm.
How do we allow for their school day to not be interrupted? How do we allow for extramurals and homework? How do we allow for a bit of downtime where they can play? And how do we allow for family time where they're not supposed to be on their devices? But it's another connection point that I think those limits shouldn't just be, this is what you have. It should be, let's talk about it. If we look at your day on a typical Monday, this is what your schedule looks like. Where are you going to fit in an hour of gaming time?
Yeah.
When you should be in class, then you should be at extramurals, you should be doing homework. So, you know what? Why don't we take your gaming time and we make that an hour, and your social media time, we make half an hour, or the other way around, depending what works for you. So that in the end, you reach some sort of agreement, but it is an agreement. It's not imposed on the child.
So you're getting their buy-in, which makes it easier to implement it and for them to stick to the rule.
And again, with that kind of caveat that this is still my device, you borrowing it, but within these limits. And obviously within those limits, you're still responsible to do your chores around the house. You're still responsible for X, Y, and Z. But that it becomes an agreement rather than me imposing the rules on you.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Let's move on and talk about the way that gaming exposes children to the possibility of being bullied.
It's an interesting one, especially when you're playing online games. So a lot of the online games you play in teams. And if you're part of a team, then you strategize together. The strategy either happens in the online chat room or it happens in a platform like Discord, where you have a couple of players playing together. Now, imagine your child is new to the game, new into the team, and the team has played a specific league, and your child is the cause of them now losing one of the final games. There's a lot of bullying situations going on in those chat rooms when you're not playing at your best.
Yes, I have definitely been cyberbullied. I have definitely cyberbullied people. It's sort of a thing. It's a very common thing, especially when you're a gamer, because, you know, you'll say something in the chat, you'll tell the other person how bad they are, you'll tell the other person whatever, and you'll rip them to shreds. And the goal is obviously to make them play worse so that you can keep making fun of them, to make them play worse so that you can win. And I don't do it that much anymore. I feel, looking back on it, it's embarrassing. It's awkward. I feel like, why did I do that? Why was I such a bad dude? You know, but yeah, it's common for just random strangers to tell you, and especially on games like Counter-Strike, or Rainbow Six, because those games have South African servers, and you know how South African people are, especially online. They're hardcore. They don't say, oh, you're so bad. They say like a whole array of racial slurs and swear words and Afrikaans, and they attack you personally as a human being. And it's like, okay, guys, we're playing a game. It can be tough to deal with.
The game is so important, and winning the game is so important. It's not really about anything else. A lot of children are experiencing bullying because they're the cause of losing, or because they just weren't at their best on that specific day.
Sure, it's terrifying because they are playing almost adult level sport, call it e-sport. It's almost at an adult level, and so they are using very grown-up tactics against one another.
It is an adult sport. A lot of the people in those games, a lot of the people in the chat rooms are adults. It's not just children playing games. We've got no idea how many people are in those chat rooms that are adults. Probably 10, 15 years ago, I was playing a game called Game of War. If you look at the type of people playing those games, I think we had one child. All the rest were adults. So we shouldn't think about gaming as just children being in those chat rooms. And the games are built to make money, right? And children aren't spending money.
Mm.
And yes, they do lure the children in to some extent, but a lot of children in those game rooms are playing along with adults, which makes it the perfect breeding ground for online predators.
Well, let's go back just quickly to putting a positive spin on it. And I'm sure that many of the kids that you interviewed when they were talking about gaming did reference making new friends.
Gaming is good for brain development. It is good for decision making. It's good for critical reasoning. The benefits of online gaming doesn't stop with brain development, right? It's also a way of interacting with other people. It's a way of making new friends. And we should recognize that not everyone out there that's playing a game with your child is out to get them.
I'm going to say about a month ago, spoke with my online best friend about some trauma that I had because it took me that I needed to talk to someone about it. And she helped me quite a lot because her and I are really, really close. And we know each other are real because we've had our cameras on and we've talked before. And we're both the same age, so it helps a lot to have someone that's on your side in all of this.
So I had Discord, and it's safe to say I only had online friends for an entire year. And they meant a lot for me, and it's quite astonishing how I say about 4 or 5 of those friends from 2020 online are still my friends today. So it's been like 2 year online friendships. And we've had voice chats, we've video called, and I know for a fact that they're not these creepy old men behind these avatars, because I have had proper conversations with them over voice and over video. So yeah, they mean a lot to me. I'd say my closest friend that I met there, who I still talk to like every day, she lives in the UAE. She's 16, 17 now. So when we started being friends, she was 14 and I was 12. And she's now turning 17 and I'm turning 15 next year. So it's quite crazy how we've both grown through teenage years together over online. And obviously she's not the only one. There's still like 3 others. There's this one person who's now finished college. When we started being friends, she was entering grade 12. Now she's finished college. And on the surface, there's a lot of people that have been told by the media that online friendships aren't real. But I feel like this proves that online friendships can be more than just some silly old person that you've never met.
A lot of people in the online game rooms are actually just there to make friends and to game together. I think so much opportunity in gaming, if only we can get it right to protect them.
I think that's a perfect way to end. And as always, Rochelle is there to help concerned parents. Feel free to reach out to her. All her contact details are on the website, FYI, Play It Safe. And tune in for the next episode when we're going to be unpacking cyberbullying.
And that wraps up this episode of Sip the Tea. We want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to everyone who made this possible. Big thank you to my interviewer and fellow mom, Amy McIver. Greg Cocoveos at Branded Podcasts. Without you, this would not have happened. And a special shout out to the real stars of the show, the brave children who shared their experiences so openly with me. Please stay connected. You can reach me, Rochelle, at rochelle@fyiplayitsafe.com. and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Our handles are @FYIPlayItSafe for more insights and conversations.